WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth.
Very good.
Thank you. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome, and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I am your host. We have a great show lined up for you this evening, starting with the first hour. First hour, of course, we begin the show with the State House report. Again, the purpose of the State House report is to have state reps and state senators from the South Shore come on in or call in and talk about what it is that they're working on. What are they doing for their constituents? What legislation or laws are they working on? What's going on with the budget? Dave DeCoste, state rep serving the 5th Plymouth District, will be my guest coming up in a few moments. One of the key things he's going to talk about, and I'm very interested in chatting with him about, is work on a left lane bill. Now, how many times have you been driving on the highway, especially if you're going up Route 3, especially a two-lane road, and you've got an 18-wheeler in the right lane and somebody who just doesn't want to go over 56 miles an hour or 61 miles an hour in the left lane? Well, I believe what Dave is looking to do is do some kind of an update to a law that's currently on the books that would, I think, increase the fine or the penalty for just driving, you know, the speed limit in that lane. We'll talk with him about that. We'll get all of those details. Following the state representative, we'll speak with a good friend, former WATD anchor and reporter Steve Burns. I have fondly called him a couple of different new names when he was down in Washington, D.C., working for WMAL. He was my D.C. correspondent. When he moved over to the Big Apple, New York, he became my New York correspondent, especially during COVID. We had him on last year. We talked about how the virus was affecting New York and what they were going through initially in the full throngs of this pandemic. Today, we'll get a little bit of an update as to what's going on with the virus. But what's very interesting is that the governor, Andrew Cuomo, is on the hot seat. He has gone from being the hero. He was the voice of reason at the height of the pandemic in 2020 to where now there's an issue about maybe hiding numbers as far as deaths in nursing homes. We'll talk with Steve about that. Also, if you don't mind, he and I are baseball honks, knowing that pitchers and catchers and positional players have reported to spring training. We'll touch base with him about baseball. So that's coming up in a few moments. And then hour number two, exclusively, we are going to have fire chiefs from the South Shore. I'm sure you're aware of what's going on in regards to the distribution of the COVID vaccine, that there was an effort initially to have it localized and having local communities do their own, starting with first responders, the older population, and then working your way down. Well, things have changed. We're going to be joined by Whitman Fire Chief Tim Greno, Abington Fire Chief John Nuttall, also Kevin Nord, the Duxbury Fire Chief, and Hanover Fire Chief Jeff Blanchard. And we will discuss what's going on. We kind of get from the start. Was there a cohesive plan at the beginning? How long did the planning take place? These are the questions I have. And where do things stand right now? And also allow them to vent their frustration in regards to the situation at this particular time. But right now, time for us to find out what's happening out on the roadway. Being brought to you by Brennan Smoke Shop. Online at BrennanSmokeShopMA.com with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. 93 South is heavy and slow from the Braintree split up to a crash at Route 24. North End's tied up from Route 138 to Route 24. Route 24 South is in good shape from 93 to 495. Expressway southbound stop and go from Mass Ave to Columbia Road. Then we're slow from Granite Ave to the split. Northbound's tied up from the Braintree split to Freeport Street and Route 3 South. Spotty delays from the Bergen Parkway to Route 18. This report is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Hey, Prime members, save at Whole Foods Market with animal welfare certified 90% lean ground beef for $4.99 a pound through February 23rd while supplies last. Learn more on the Whole Foods Market app. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
I'm amazed at the number of you here in the Commonwealth that aren't aware of the tobacco flavor ban. All flavored vape and tobacco products are banned from being sold here in Massachusetts, including menthol. It's okay. You can always go to New Hampshire or stop by one of our 9 locations and pick up some flavored CBD hemp wraps. Grape, pineapple, watermelon, strawberry. That's right. We have a huge selection of full-spectrum CBD hemp wraps. It's just another example of our American ingenuity. Oh, and a very special thank you to Speaker of the House Robert DeLeo for 30 years on Beacon Hill. May your greatest achievement be sending billions of Massachusetts taxpayer dollars to New Hampshire. Billions of dollars for their infrastructure, their roads, their police and firefighters, etc., etc.,
etc., etc. Count them, etc., etc.
Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and now on Bridge Street in North Weymouth. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Flavored CBD hemp wraps, dudes.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Right, we are back for our first segment of Monday Night Talk. As you know, if you tune into the show regularly, we reserve the first spot in the radio program for our local legislators, our state reps, our state senators. If we have a constitutional officer is kind enough to join us, and then great, then we save it for them and we talk about things that are going on in and around the Commonwealth or particular districts. Joining us, as he does on a regular basis when his rotation number comes up, State Rep Dave DeCoste, representing the fine folks, the 5th Plymouth District Representative. How are you, sir?
Kevin, thanks for having me on this evening.
I can't thank you enough. I can't thank your colleagues enough. Regardless of what the letter is next to your name, you are all always willing to speak with your local media, especially us here at 95.9 WATD, and especially on this radio program. So I'm ready to kind of just dive right in, if you are.
You bet.
Yeah, so it's I see it's that time of year, you know, the beginning of the legislative session where, you know, as a lawmaker, you get to, you know, decide, you know, what bills you're going to author, what you're going to put forth, who you're going to, maybe you're going to support a piece of legislation. You have your colleagues asking, hey, can you sign this docket number? One of the top ones that I you and I were chatting offline about real quick was, and it's kind of something that I have an interest out of, because I feel that people are less and less responsible when they're behind the wheel of a motor vehicle. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind me taking it out of order, I believe that you're kind of looking around and you're kind of doing some research on a possible left lane bill.
We had a discussion on the Transportation Committee last year regarding road rage. And one of the topics that came up after interviewing a number of state policemen was the fact that there's not a whole lot of incentive or teeth in the Massachusetts law that stipulates that if you're not passing in the left lane, you need to pull over. And so we're looking at putting together a bill that would put some teeth into the left lane law and, you know, make it a little bit more of an infraction for people who decide that they're going to go 55 miles an hour in the left lane. We've all seen it. We've all seen people where, you know, you have a half mile of cars and there's a, you know, there's a car in the left lane that's pacing a tractor trailer and nobody can pass. So we're going to take a closer look at doing doing something along that those lines.
Especially if you're somebody who's traversing Route 3, where it's a two-lane road, you know, two lanes up, two lanes back, and you have somebody who is tying up that left lane. I think that would be a good bill and have something in place. Folks, I mean, you know, maybe something that is advertised as well that, you know, you're going to put some teeth in this. Almost like the texting while driving bill, I think. It was initially a texting while driving bill. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think that they actually increased the penalties with an amendment to the bill.
Yeah, they did. And for that bill, I supported that bill. And that's something that, you know, we still have it. I mean, you know, there have been incidents locally where we've had those type of problems. So I think in that case, the penalties need to be reviewed regularly and, you know, allow for the fact that in many cases that inflation has reduce the deterrent, the financial deterrent to doing these things.
The other piece of legislation I thought maybe you and I might want to talk a little bit about is verifying someone's status here in the country. If you are somebody from another country, you get documentation. You should have documentation, and if you're an employer, you should also have that. It's part of your records. You should have it on file. Are you working on something in that regards?
We've already filed a bill. We'll have a docket number shortly, but we will. We're taking a look at implementing a state e-verify policy, or at least trying to, so that you know, without burdening local businesses, all it requires is that they verify that the social security numbers that their employees are using are valid, and that they are employing somebody who should be in the country.
Is that going to be an issue, knowing that we've seen a change in Washington? Is this something that's going to be an issue to get passed here in the Commonwealth, or do you feel that it should be no issue?
I think it's worth a debate. You know, you and I have spoken that I, in terms of getting something voted on, I stand for everything. We need 16 individuals, which is 10% of the 160 people in the legislature to stand to get a vote taken. And I stand for every single, time fellow legislature wants to vote. I may not vote. I quite often won't be voting for what they want to pass, but I always stand for the vote. And I think it's worth a vote. And to your point regarding there's a great deal of, I would say, discord. There are two schools of thought. There are people who, you know, many people within the legislature want to accommodate people who are in the country illegally by giving them licenses. Personally, I don't think that's a good idea. But I think all of those things we should at least have a vote on, so our constituents know where we stand, and you know, we can move forward on some of these issues. There's no question in my mind that if us something like E-Verify were put on the state ballot, and that it would pass, no question at all. But we have a lot of bills like that with a huge amount of support, and sometimes they just don't seem to make it through. Are kind of a bit far afield, but we've got a bill again this year, a rape survivor bill. Right now, if a woman who is raped and chooses to have her child in this state, has to worry about the rapist asserting parental rights, believe it or not. We're one of the few states where that's still the case. You know, it's funny. Alabama and Mississippi have already revised their laws. We normally compare themselves and, you know, to them to say, you know, how far ahead we are, but we still haven't remedied that. So this year we're working with, in fact, the lady who championed this because it happened to her in Florida. We'll have her up this year, Annalyn Megason. And I know we spoke with her, and right. We'll have her up this year, and again try to push this through.
How far did it make it through the process last session?
Well, nothing made it. Very few things made it out of the, and it was not a timely filed bill. This time it is. It is timely filed. It will be filed timely, in a timely fashion.
Well, something. Well, I would look forward to if she does come up here, yep. and is part of maybe any hearings that are held. It'd be fantastic to have her on the radio station or have her do a segment. Or maybe even do something on a local cable. Maybe that'll be something that can resonate across the Commonwealth.
You would hope so. But as soon as she's coming up, we'll let her know. You'll be the first guy I give a yell to.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, so you're doing a refile on that, obviously.
We're doing a refile, and that's another. We're working on some foster care legislation. Those are examples of two bills that have broad bipartisan support, very broad bipartisan support.
And so as a legislator, when you have a piece of when you have a measure that you put forth and it doesn't necessarily get signed into law, what's your approach? Do you normally refile as is the next term, or do you do anything to tweak it?
You know, that's a great question. And the answer is yes to both. The answer is yes. In some cases, they're fine. For instance, we have a Tom Williams on WATD. I spoke to Tom and I listened to him Saturday mornings. And we're on the basis of what I hear from him, we're going to have an estate tax bill that basically remedies the problem with the in this state, taxes over states over $1 million are taxed at a pretty high level. And we're going to at least take a look at trying to raise the threshold from $1 million to $2 or $3 million, so that it doesn't provide such an incentive for people to leave the state. Whereas, say something, we have a fentanyl bill that I filed at the behest of some local law enforcement people, and that bill will go in as is. There was no objection to what's going on. So it really depends. Sometimes the hearings are good. The hearings are always a good thing, but sometimes you pick up improvements to a bill that you could make. And since the vast majority of bills aren't being passed, you're able to, accommodate those objections and modify your legislation to reflect some good ideas or some legitimate concerns that opponents bring up. And sometimes you can bring those opponents over and they'll, with a couple of, as you said, tweaks to the bill, they'll be supporting your legislation. That, by the way, happened on the foster care bill we passed, the Foster Parents Bill of Rights. There were some objections and we modified it and got it through. And you'll see that some of the bills we're filing this year reflect some of the improvements that could be suggested.
And if you are tuned in, we are speaking with State Representative Dave DeCoste, representing the 5th Plymouth District of Rockland, Norwell, and Hanover. And he joins us on a regular basis, as do a lot of the South Shore legislative delegation, as they do, just so they can have a chance to hear some of the things that they're working on, what's going on in the district. And they're all proud to do so. And if it isn't evident, sorry, it is to me.
We work well together. Not to interrupt you. One other thing I think would be of interest to your audience that all of us are working on is a bill to basically make the North River Commission, which is, North River is the only scenic river in Massachusetts. And this bill would allow the North River Commission to have authority, the type of approval authority over 40Bs along the river within their geographical purview, that they would have to grant approval to any 40B that move forward. And just by the way, and that just puts 40B on par with every other lot and property along the river. You can't put a small pier out without their approval. You can't build a deck in many cases without their approval. And the people who administer the builders who administer 40Bs as regards septic systems and buildings and so forth should not be exempt from the same requirements that everyone else along the river has to abide by.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You are someone who, when you initially ran for state rep, wanted a signature pieces of legislation. And one of the things that you were concerned with was affordable housing, 40Bs. Mm-hmm. Where do you have anything that you're working on this session that has any improvements other than what you had just mentioned, Nell?
Yeah, well, statewide, I'd like to see basically manufactured homes, and we're looking at that statewide manufactured homes counted against the 40B count. Won't have anything to do with their property leases and selling or buying or anything. It just would simply reflect the fact that manufactured homes virtually always provide, in fact, affordable housing alternatives. We are also, by the way, in that respect, I'm working with several Democratic legislatures to review the way we look at public housing, specifically housing authorities, because I think there's broad agreement in the legislature, again, across party lines, across philosophical lines, that our housing authorities are doing a great job. Certainly my housing authorities in Norwell and Rockland, and Norwell, by the way, administers Cohasset, just terrific jobs, long waiting lists. The problem is we can't get them the funding for just basic improvements without an earmark in many cases. So we want to review that. And if we're going to spend money on housing, certainly there should be some money for housing at the state level that our housing authorities can apply for in terms of both, in some cases, just general renovations, maintenance, but in some cases, larger projects.
We just got 3 or 4 minutes left in our conversation, Representative. So I want to spin the wheel and stop the wheel at whatever particular conversation you want to touch upon, whether it's unemployment claims, which I know that your office does yeoman's work when it comes to assisting constituents, senior tax relief, or the ongoing vaccination issue.
Why don't I do 1, 3, 2? I have an office staff of one. Natalie Ellard is just doing a terrific job. Unfortunately, we're seeing claims spike, which indicates to me maybe the economy up here is not getting any better. And she is keeping up with the volume. The state is keeping up with the volume. But two things. If people need help, our office is always available, and it's just david.decost@masshouse.gov, or certainly they can free to contact us directly, or through the senior centers, or through the town halls, the town offices. They all have my personal cell phone number, and they can call me directly, and they all know that they can do that. You mentioned vaccinations. We are working and advocating strongly with Governor Baker to do a decentralized vaccination system whereby our EMS teams in Hanover and Norwell and Rockland can run their own clinics. We've already seen it locally. The administration is going in a different direction, but we've been strongly advocating. And I think I speak for everyone in the South Shore that we're looking for local personnel to do, local people, because it's easier. The outreach is just so much simpler, and we can handle it here on that basis. And then you finally mentioned senior tax relief. We'll have a mailing out. I'm glad you did that because the senior circuit breaker, everyone forgets about that. And we still think there's about somewhere between $1 and $2 million left on the table because people are not taking advantage of the senior circuit breaker. And briefly, the senior circuit breaker works as though if your property taxes are more than 10% of your income, the state will refund up to $1,000. Actually, it's a little bit more this year. So for many people, it's simply a matter of filling out their taxes and applying for it at the state level.
There he is, State Representative Dave DeCost as our guest. I was going to try to squeeze in the passing of Rush Limbaugh. I'm not sure if you're much of a radio guy or not, or if you followed as he passed away last week and didn't know if, in fact, you were a fan of his or not.
I met him once. He was actually down at Fort Bragg when he was just starting out. He came down. He actually came in and talked to some of the soldiers at the 82nd. It was an event after an event he had, but he always made it quietly All right. But he always made it a point to support the troops. And by the way, support the troops financially as well. There are a myriad of instances where he personally financed trips home to the USO and many other things locally to where he was in New York and Florida. So it's never good to see anyone pass. But he had a rough 7 or 8 months. And he's, I think, one of the highlights of, you know, President Trump's last State of the Union speech was the fact that he could recognize Russia's. Because I will tell you one thing about him, and you being radio realize that sometimes we have the shock radio and people aren't quite as, you know, maybe as gentlemanly as they should be. He always approached things usually with a strong sense of humor. And even the jibes were more along the lines of humorous than maybe some of the sardonic things we see now.
Definitely good way to end and wrap up our conversation and remember someone who did things and not only was, you know, not only did he do things in entertainment, but also is a part of America, Americana. Thank you again, Representative. We'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Kevin, I want to thank you and also the management, Ed, at WATD for giving us all, because as I've said before, is that if there was no WATD, we would have no coverage of local news. Absolutely.
Well put. Definitely well put. We're going to step aside when we come back. More Monday Night Talk just in a few moments here at 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
Liberty Mutual Insurance Company customizes your home insurance so you only pay for what you need.
As a minimalist, paying less for insurance is more.
Nice place. Is your house a bubble?
It's a dome. I find corners unnecessary.
At Liberty Mutual, that's how we feel about overpaying for insurance.
But I do miss having shelves.
What would you put on them?
Nothing, obviously.
Only pay for what you need at LibertyMutual.com.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
What can give you a competitive edge in today's red-hot housing market? Rocket can. That's because Rocket Mortgage can give you a verified approval. It could help your offer stand out. Rocket Technology provides a rock-solid verification of your income, assets, and credit, giving sellers greater confidence in you. Go to rocketmortgage.com or call us today at 8338-ROCKET.
A verified approval is based on an underwriter's analysis of your individual financial information, appraisal, and title report. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAssets.org, number 30.
By the middle of the week, so much news has come your way, you need your own team to sort it out. Lucky for you, there's Jared Valenzuela and the JV team to talk about the things you've heard and catch you up on some things you might not know.
I'm Jared Valenzuela. Join me and my guests as we have fun with current events and try to put things into perspective each week. Sponsored by Representative David DeCoste and Corey Welch of Boom Realty. Catch the JV team every Wednesday night at 6:15 here on 95.9 WATD.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return for another segment of Monday Night Talk. And joining us for this particular segment, a reoccurring segment, a gentleman who you've heard here on 95.9 WATD as a blossoming news anchor, reporter, gone on to bigger and better as he is now a reporter for WCBS Radio, 880 AM in the Big Apple, New York City. He is Steve Burns, a good friend of mine as well. Mr. Burns, how are you?
I'm good. It's always a pleasure to join you and always a pleasure to be back on WATD.
I would like to call you my new, well, first off, you used to be my DC correspondent because you used to work at MAL. Well, you're no longer there, so you're more like my New York correspondent.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the flexibility in titles for whatever kind of employment you want to give me.
Just an update on yourself, Britt, the kittens. How is life? How is COVID life treating you these days?
You know, it's been interesting to be in a place like New York that's known for just nonstop activity, but it feels like an entirely different place. And I've been saying that for about a year now. I mean, we have some activity coming back to life, but it's not anywhere close to normal yet. We're trying to get the vaccines out, as I'm sure they're trying to do up there as well. And we're hoping maybe summer things get back to normal, but it's still going to be a ways away for us. So it's kind of, it's nice to be in New York, but it's also bizarre at the same time.
Does the vaccine equal normal for the foreseeable future, or normal until we're back here, you know, in the winter, and we have to worry about COVID being a mixture of not only what we know, whatever variant it is now, or the flu?
Yeah, that's still a question I don't think we fully fleshed out the answer to. The way they kind of define normal here is around 70% of the population getting the vaccine. That's when you reach herd immunity, essentially. And the goal is that anyone who gets infected, the virus essentially hits a wall because there are so many vaccines out there and it just doesn't spread as much. But again, variants, how effective the vaccine is against those, still a lot of unanswered questions.
So has COVID still been something that you're reporting on a daily basis, or has it been mixed up? Because I know you're somebody who love the transit system. You've done some great work when it comes to covering the transit system and all that is entailed in it. What's going on?
Yeah, no, it's still a part of daily life here. I mean, both regular life and reporting life. And I mean, they kind of blend together too. I had an event a couple of weeks ago where I was in the same room as someone who later tested positive. So I had to take myself off the playing field and get a couple of tests that coming week. Thankfully, everything was negative. But that's kind of the way the game is played right now and the risk that everyone's taking right now. There's a kind of risk assessment that has to be done for every story. I'm sure you've been through the same thing where you have to determine, you know, is it worth going out to get this, given what we know right now?
Is there a particular story that's, it's the gift that keeps giving? It's like every time you turn around, there's an update.
I don't want to call it a gift, but there is certainly an ongoing story in New York that I'm sure has become national news at this point, and that's what is happening with Governor Cuomo. It's kind of been, there's been a lot of lingering questions the past few months, how he handled nursing homes at the height of the pandemic, whether some of his policies may have contributed to further spread and further deaths. And those questions were kind of compounded in the past few weeks about the questions there were compounded by questions about potential for a cover-up and whether he deliberately withheld any kind of information about the true death toll. And we later found out through an attorney general report that deaths were undercounted by around 50%. And the total went from about 8,500 to more than 15,000. And now, of course, you have all the questions that are going to result from that. We have lawmakers asking why this information was withheld. We have lawmakers calling for the governor's powers to be turned back and curtailed. We have some lawmakers calling for impeachment. So there's still a lot of fallout to be kind of assessed from this, but this is the kind of story that, you know, it smacks of political scandal, and it's definitely not something that you want. I mean, especially for Governor Cuomo, who was kind of seen as this beacon of hope and confidence and competence in the middle of this. It's a complete about face, a complete political 180 for him.
Yeah, it was for a while, it was a very, very interesting measuring stick between Governor Cuomo and our current president at that time, Donald Trump. And you're like, wow, why can't, and I heard folks saying it, why can't Governor Cuomo be our president? Why can't he be leading us, you know, through the thick and the thin of this pandemic? And it seems to me as though the governor has gone from being a pandemic hero to now he's on the hot seat. And it's interesting that you mentioned, because I was scrolling through as you were talking, and the New York Post saying that the New York State, that the GOP are actually forming an impeachment commission. Oh, my
goodness. Yeah. Yeah, they would call for an impeachment commission. Democrats are still in power, so it'd be up to them to kind of pull the trigger on that. But yeah, I mean, this is a guy who won an Emmy Award for his press conferences. He wrote a book in the middle of the summer. He went on virtual book tours, and it came out that while he was on these book tours hawking a book that talked about all the great things that he had done in COVID response, at the same time, his office was withholding thousands and thousands of deaths in nursing homes. There's just no, you know, positive way to spin this for him.
You know, the interesting follow-up I was going to have is, you know, have things settled down now that we have a new administration in place with, you know, President Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as his VP? you would think that things would have settled down, especially for, you know, New York.
Yeah, no, that's a
not the case.
Yeah, not the case. And that's a really interesting point, because when Donald Trump was president, all the Democrats could unite around one common enemy, essentially. But now that one common enemy is gone, you're starting to see a lot more of the splinters and the cracks in the Democratic Party. And it's some of the most left-leaning progressive Democrats in New York that are leading the charge against Governor Cuomo, who's a fellow Democrat, but a lot of those progressives see him as too conservative, too moderate. So you can definitely see some of those kind of splinters starting to form now that President Trump's gone.
What's interesting also, and I'm not sure how much you follow what goes on here in Massachusetts, but Governor Cuomo is not alone on the hot seat at this particular time. The hot story here in Massachusetts is there was a push to have local communities administer the vaccine. You had, whether it was the local fire department, the health department, public nurse, whatever, you know, start just, you know, going through the different phases where you'd start with your firefighters, your first responders would get it, then you would work your way to the older population, and then maybe going to with the educators, the teachers, the faculty. That was the plan as of a couple of weeks ago. Well, I'd say actually less than that. Governor Charlie Baker decided that instead of doing it that way, actually put a hold on stripping out the vaccines. Now, this has been midstream. We've already entered the second phase. They already distributed to all the first responders. They were just starting to give the first dose because we're doing the Moderna, which is the two doses. That was supposed to be administered in the next couple of weeks. That's been put on hold. And instead, it's all being shifted, and people are being asked instead, go to the mass inoculation sites like Gillette Stadium, like Fenway Park, or maybe the Marshfield Fairgrounds. Remember what that is, right?
Oh, yeah, Marshfield Fair, classic.
Can't miss it. Go to where there are sites where they can at least be able to administer enough, you know, larger quantities of the vaccines instead of doing it in, you know, giving 1,000, you know, doses to this community and that. And people are upset, especially here in the South Shore. You have a lot of leaders. You have a lot of folks who are lawmakers up in the State House who are joining with local fire departments and health departments saying, what are you doing? So Governor Cuomo isn't alone at this particular time.
Yeah. And we're having a lot of those same battles about the vaccine and how best to get them out. The big question here, as I'm sure it is around all big cities up there, is racial equity and diversity. And are we doing enough to get to those communities of color? And we're seeing here so far that's not happening to the best of our ability. So that's, yeah, another big question here too.
And you're just tuning in. We're speaking with the one and only Steve Burns, a one-time WATD news anchor reporter, and now doing it big time in New York with the WCBS radio, 880 AM on your radio dial if you happen to be in and around New York City. And we're talking about Governor Cuomo and how he's doing since the last time we touched upon. I think, when did we have you on last? Was it at the New Year's or before the New Year's? Do you recall when?
It's been a little while. I remember one of the last, you know, normal radio interviews I did before the pandemic was up there around the New Hampshire primary, which is about a year ago now. It's hard to believe that's how long it's been.
You know, we're talking about elections. When is Cuomo, is he in the second half of his legislative term? When is he up for re-election?
He's up for re-election next year, and there are no term limits in New York. He would be going for his fourth term in 2022, and all indications are he's going to run again. Obviously, we think back to his father, Mario Cuomo, and his fourth term did not come to fruition. He lost to George Pataki. So we have all these kinds of legacy issues and ghosts of political past that are going to be coming up here in the next year for Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, is that would be something I'm sure that your radio station will be watching and following as each new candidate makes themselves known and kicks off their campaigns. They'll be able to tune into CBS Radio to hear all those details.
Yes, of course. That's the core part of our coverage.
Now, what folks, if you've heard Steve on here before, other than talking about politics and how things are going, one thing that we have is a kinship is baseball. America's pastime. Here we are. I mean, The trucks, the equipment trucks have departed and went to the respective spring training sites. Are you excited for baseball?
I don't know. Excited might be too strong a term. I feel like I'm in the same boat as a lot of people where sports have kind of fallen by the wayside given everything else that's going on. It is a nice distraction. It was a nice distraction for, you know, the couple months where they played last summer. But, you know, it's hard to, you know, put too many eggs in that basket when, you know, everything else is going on.
You have to admit that's the one thing that you miss probably about regular life is, I mean, you and I would try to do a baseball game or two a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've gone down to where you live and you've come up here into the Boston area to take in a game, knowing that, you know, it could be another year before we're able to be sitting in the seats and taking on everything, you know, taking in, you know, that ambiance that is a ball game.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, back in like the worst days in early mid-April when we were afraid to even leave our front door, my big thought was, I just can't wait to go to a baseball game again. That'll be the signifier, the ultimate signifier to me that things are back to normal. And the first day where I'm able to go to a baseball game, whether it's Yankee Stadium or minor league field near here, I'm going to be there. That's kind of what, you know, centers me and brings me back down to earth is watching a good baseball game, and I could use that right now.
Did you feel that last year's season actually counted? Could there be an asterisk next to that? You know, if you're a Los Angeles Dodgers fan, you'd be no, absolutely not.
I don't know. I mean, a 60-game season is vastly different from a 162-game season, but there was also, you know, it was pretty difficult and challenging to get through just a 60-game season in the middle of a pandemic, and I know the players worked hard, so I don't know. There's good arguments on both sides.
I saw last season as like a supersized spring training. I mean, that's what it was. I mean, you'd get maybe between 28 and 35 games in during a spring training.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, this could be one of the last seasons of regular baseball as we knew it because they're up for a new contract next year and things could get very, very ugly. So enjoy it while it lasts.
I know you're a fan of a particular baseball team, and it's not one of where you live now. do you have high hopes for the Oakland Athletics?
I would have answered no, but then this past week they made like a flurry of moves. It's like the person who waited till the last second to finish their term paper and then ended up getting it done. The bullpen all of a sudden looks great, so I don't know. Maybe it's going to be challenging with the Astros still. We'll have to see.
Yeah, what's interesting is the Boston Red Sox are trying to take a page out of the Tampa Bay Rays and the Oakland Athletics playbook as to, I shouldn't say playbook, but managerial style, spending habits, where they're not spending big money. I mean, the biggest acquisition of the offseason was bringing Alex Cora back as manager. That was basically it.
Yeah, and that was controversial in itself.
It was. It definitely was. So it'll be interesting. And, you know, Alex is... You know, when Alex had his last season, I mean, he was barely 500. I would say he was 84 and 78 compared to the season prior when you were able to make noises and let folks know what the next pitch is going to be. You know, they won, you know, a team record of games. So I think it was like 108 games they had won. They'd never done that before, you know?
Right. I mean, and I don't follow close enough, so I'll just ask you, are they kind of in this, you know, full rebuild mode, or are they kind of in a limbo?
They haven't signed Jackie Bradley Jr. They just traded away Andrew Benintendi. I mean, you have a bunch of individuals you still have some stars, but I don't know if it's of the caliber. And not to diminish the Sox. I mean, you may have Chris Sale back. You know, Chris Sale is used to being on a 500 team. I mean, he was with the White Sox for some time before he was able to get himself a release to go to the Red Sox and win himself a ring. It's going to be interesting. You know, you're going to have to hope that you have starting pitching. I've heard rumors that they may go with a 6-man rotation. We'll see what happens. It's going to be a lot better than last year because I couldn't tell you who any of the starting pitchers were. It seemed as though you were grabbing individuals from your farm system and giving them an opportunity to see if they could shine, and maybe they can grow from the experience from the year prior. And that's what you have. You have a couple of bright spots, but I honestly see the Sox maybe the next couple of years where they're not going to spend a lot of money and they're going to try to harvest. Like, look at the Rays. I mean, the Rays, as are the Athletics, fantastic when it comes to being able to draft good pitching. And we haven't been, and the Sox have not been able to do that. Normally, the way you get your pitching staff, if you're a Boston Red Sox front office, you know, whether you're general manager or president of baseball operations, is, well, we gotta be competitive when it comes to free agency, or we need to trade away half of our farm system to get the guy.
Right, right. And that's one of the issues with the current setup in baseball, I think, and that could be part of the next set of negotiations, is do we have a salary cap? Do we have a salary floor? Or are you just a team that's kind of stuck in the middle and you get okay draft picks but not great draft picks, and nobody's going to kind of out-tank the Orioles right now? So, you know, what can you do when you're stuck in the middle?
Be the San Diego Padres.
There we go. You can always dream.
You always dream. Steve, I want to thank you for joining us. Anything you want to say in closing before we say goodbye?
Just always appreciate being on WATD. And, you know, it's been a little while since I was up there, but I still, again, always cherish the time I spent there in the WATD news department. It, you know, shaped my career today, and I'm always grateful for it.
Well, best of luck to you and the many more Andrew Cuomo stories that you're going to be covering in the coming weeks and months ahead.
I appreciate that. Thanks very much.
Yeah, there he is, Steve Burns with the WCBF Radio in New York, our guest. We're going to step aside. That does it for hour number one. When we come back, more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WAED.
Dad, you think UFOs will ever come?
Well, I'm not sure they've ever been invited.
Can we invite them?
Yeah, but how?
Well, we've got a flat roof and Christmas light strings. We can spell out UFOs land here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll hold the ladder for you.
Later that night, there arose such a clatter.
Dad, look out on the lawn! A UFO with a broken windshield!
Wow, better call Tiny and Sons. They'll replace that windshield and insurance pays.
Do space aliens have insurance?
Oh, they wouldn't leave home without it.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. Our service is out of this world. Just call 1-888-64-TINYS. And thank you.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians every Tuesday night, 8 to 10, brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. Tomorrow night, we have another full show in store for you with tons of new music and upcoming events to let you know about. And we'll be joined on the Tiny stage by singer-songwriter Phil Pacino. That's tomorrow, 8 to 10, right here on 95.9 WATD and 95.9WATD.com.
As a dentist, I know what my patients are saying during times when they really can't speak.
Mm-hmm.
She says her gums are irritated.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you can do? Absolutely. You can try New Crest Advanced Gum Restore.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, New Crest Advanced Gum Restore. It detoxifies below the gum line to restore your gums back to health in just 7 days.
Mm-hmm. Healthy mouth.
Exactly. Healthy gums, healthy mouth.
New Crest Advanced Gum Restore. Healthy, beautiful smiles for life.
Panera's new flatbread pizzas are here. But to our new chef, Klaus, they're not just pizzas. They're masterpieces. Because it's not just cheese. It's hot and melty mozzarella and fontina cheese. It's not just sauce. It's market tomato red bell pepper sauce. And it's not just toppings. It's fresh mozzarella, basil, and grape tomatoes. Mmm. Taste our delicious new flatbread pizzas today. Order online for pickup or delivery. Panera. Restrictions apply.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. Down. download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome and thank you for joining us for a special one-hour discussion about the ongoing efforts to localize the distribution of COVID vaccines. Joining us for this conversation, we have Whitman Fire Chief Tim Greno, Bexbury Fire Chief Kevin Nord, and Hanover Fire Chief Jeff Blanchard. Gentlemen, welcome to the conversation and thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for inviting us on.
Thank you.
But again, you know, I like to have groups of folks, whether it's the police chiefs, the fire chiefs, your local representation, lawmakers, town administrators. Again, you get to find out where things are going, if there's a unity or if there are issues. The main issue that we're here to talk about is what is going on with the COVID vaccinations, the ability to inoculate residents locally, where right now it seems as though there's a lot of chaos that's going on, or there's been chaos, and hopefully we're going to see things trending in the right direction. I think the best way to start our conversation is maybe doing a little bit of a backstory with our residents as to how long you have each, your communities have been invested, or maybe regionally you've been invested in having conversations with the state about, you know, distributing the vaccines. Chief Brown, would you like to start?
Sure, Kevin. That starts long before COVID-19 or the coronavirus, like was ever even thought about. Cities and states across the Commonwealth, through both the fire department and their emergency management departments, have been planning for disaster preparedness and public health emergencies and everything since the Cold War. And the state requires us to have emergency dispensing sites where we can mass inoculate 15,000 residents, like in a short time, like period of time. They require us to train on them. They require us to upkeep them. And we're there. We're at it. And we've done it. There's been millions of dollars spent across the Commonwealth over, the years to maintain these sites and to do training on the incident command system and logistics and the planning P and all the intricacies that go along with running these operations. And that's our job. That's what we've been doing. And we've been doing and we've been preparing and we're ready to go. And for whatever reason, this entire pandemic is not viewed as a statewide, I'd say, emergency, gentlemen, but it's viewed as a Department of Public Health pandemic. And the key agency who oversees all of the natural disasters and man-made disasters and everything else in Massachusetts has been left in the back burner. The experts, Mass Emergency Management Agency. And that's where we fall into play. And I think that you'll see from day one with the PPE issues straight up through now, 14 months later, we're still feeling the effects of that improper classification.
But it seems to me as though the state was initially on board, listening to feedback from local towns and cities about doing these localized inoculations. Am I wrong, Chief Nord?
No, 15 years ago, you know, we started the Medical Reserve Corps, which was a volunteer program from FEMA. You might recognize the term CERT, Community Emergency Response Team, as well.
Yep.
And we stood those teams up in anticipation that, we're going to be hit with a large disaster where resources were going to be thin and we were going to have to rely on the community to help us. And that's the crux of those volunteer groups. And, we have the Duxbury Bay Regional MRC, which encompasses several towns here close to Duxbury Bay, obviously. And we have a large roster of volunteers that are both, in practice as well as retired, that are skilled with the delivery of medical services. And it's unfortunately, it was spun up, spent a lot of money, time, energy, training, quarterly meetings. And these volunteers that want to give back to their community are kind of got a slap in the face because they're not being utilized as intended. Some are. We certainly used them for our first responder in phase one doses. And obviously they're being used currently now over in Marshfield's drive-in clinic. But for the most part, they're sitting idle in these individual communities that have also worked with other communities to spin up for phase two, our 75 plus, 65 plus, and so on. And that's where things seem to fall apart. We were making these preparations as we just came out of phase one with the volunteers, with the fire service, with emergency management. And it kind of fell apart to shift towards these mega sites. And a large population in these communities have that 65 plus, 75 plus with the comorbidities, that homebound, not easily accessible. Just take a look out your window and take a look at the weather, and you're expecting someone to drive to a vaccine clinic far away from here. Just doesn't seem prudent. I don't think that was the intention, and we certainly didn't see it coming. So to answer your question, yeah, there's been a lot of preparation over the years to get to this point to deliver a needed service in a time like this. And as Chief Greno said, we're very good at dealing with storms and emergencies, and we just kind of take that all hazards approach all the time. And this is no different than a long-term, nor'easter with flooding and power outages and stuff like that. You manage it, and you throw people power at it, and you dust off your plans and you execute. And we're kind of frustrated, very frustrated. I'll end on that note.
Chief Blanchard, Chief Brett had mentioned about, each individual community being able to administer doses, whether it was to the first responders or maybe even some of the older population. I would think that you had resounding success in those initial inoculations. Am I correct?
We did. Our local Board of Health has worked with the fire department closely, but not just those two agencies, the school department, the nurses that are there. Literally, I'll speak for all the towns. I mean, everyone has had to figure out how to do things during this pandemic, whether it's how to hold safe elections or hold a town meeting. We figured out how to move people through lines during the elections, and that's transferable to doing the vaccines. And even though we haven't had enough vaccine to really, need to move people like we did through an election yet, we did do our first responders, like Chief Nord mentioned, and we have done a handful of the elderly as the dribble of vaccine does become available. But we are prepared for that. And like Chief Nord said, we have people that have been thinking that this was coming. I mean, the pandemic's been around. It's been a year now since it was in the news, and we're all kind of wondering if it was going to land here. It'll be what's it, March 13th will be the year anniversary of declaring an emergency here. Every single community's had a chance to think about how they're going to deliver vaccine, because vaccine was the end of the pandemic, right? I mean, we've been told that once we get enough vaccine in people's arms, then that's when we can start to get back to normal. So every community, every Board of Health, every fire agency, every emergency medical service agency that operates within a community has been thinking about this. And I know Hanover, we've looked at our emergency dispensing sites. We talked about how are we going to stand this up. And we're prepared to do it. And it's just very frustrating for all of us to sit here and think that we have this amazing machine that's in place. And it may not be perfect. I know, every day we learn something new on how to handle the pandemic. But, I think every community would be in a very good position to begin delivering the doses tomorrow if they showed up. And it might take us 3 or 4 days to get it so that it's running really well. But I can tell you, after we were doing it for a week or 2 weeks, we'd be very good at it. And
if I could add to what Jeff said and to reiterate something that Chief Greno has done as well as Chief Blanchard in these other towns, this kind of started off with the PPE, you know, the personal protective equipment, you know, most of us only stock a couple of weeks. And then all of a sudden the market dried up and there was a big movement as we focused on more regional assets as well as state assets and then federal assets. But, you know, for 30, 60 days there, you know, we were all helping each other out, securing PPE by any means necessary. And we did that. So we do deal with that. The next phase of this pandemic, I think, was the ability to test rapidly and to get our firefighters tested. And we achieved that. You know, we went out and purchased on our own, you know, kits that we could directly test our own and send into the labs rather than to stand in line at a Walgreens or a CVS, and not to discredit what they're doing, but, you know, to get our people back in service or to put somebody out for an automatic 5 to 10 days because we don't know. We dealt with that. And this is just that next phase of this whole pandemic is the vaccine rollout. And every step of the way, we seem to be coming up against roadblocks at the state level. That's my opinion. And I don't know if the other chiefs agree with me, but, you know, here we are again.
Chief Brenna, you want to chime in?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple. Well, I know that there's a couple of good points that both chiefs have made. One of the more prominent factors is collaboration. And the fire service in Massachusetts is well-versed in collaboration. We work together every single day, and we help each other fix each other's problems. What you've seen in this pandemic is a great collaboration with our local Board of Health and every other agencies within our communities to muddle our way through this pandemic. And there's no one local Board of Health, unless you're in the city of Worcester or Boston or whatever, that has the resources and staffing that can single-handedly run a vaccination program or a testing program. But in collaboration with the fire departments and the police departments and the DPWs and everybody else, we've built a team over here that we get it done. They do the registrations, they help with scheduling, they help with notifications, and my paramedics do the vaccinations. And that's how this has worked since day one across the Commonwealth. The only agency that's not collaborating with us is the Department of Public Health. They're more or less dictating what they want to see done, which isn't working at the ground level.
You're just tuning into this conversation. We, of course, are speaking with a couple of South Shore Fire Chiefs, Hanover Fire Chief Jeff Blanchard, Duxbury Fire Chief Kevin Nord, and Whitman Fire Chief Tim Grenell, and we're talking about what happened. You know, we went from localized distribution of the COVID vaccines to all of a sudden now there's a push to have these done at mass sites. So I'm going to be blunt here, gentlemen. So what the hell happened? How did this happen? And were you included in the conversation? Or did you just get a communique that said, all right, well, you know what? We've decided we're going to go in a different direction. So thanks for what you've done so far. Does it seem like that's what happened? Is that accurate?
I guess I can stab at it first and you guys jump in. Several weeks ago, we received a notification from the Department of Public Health that basically stated that there was going to be a shortage of vaccinations in the next couple weeks and to plan for that. That was the only official notification that we received. About 2 weeks after that, as we started to put in for our vaccinations each week, our requests were denied. 2 weeks in a row, the past 2 weeks. And that's pretty much the only formal notification that we received up until we received a letter from DPH then stating that local clinics will no longer be supported as of March 1st. And as I previously said, there was no collaboration. There was no group discussion. This is what DPH wants. This is what they're going to do. And no forethought as to what that was going to do statewide to the vaccine operation. That's my thought.
I think, you know, I look at it from three perspectives, and again, speaking personally, you know, overall, an immense lack of communication from the state down to us locally. The failure to follow the plan. You know, there was a plan etched. You know, we trained to it, and then the plan kept shifting. The goalposts kept moving. You know, you can't do, you're not going to do phase one if you can't do all phase threes, but through all three phases. And then it was, well, you can't do, you have to go into a consortium with other communities. We built that up. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, if you can't do 975 doses a day, we're not giving it to you. So it kept, the ball kept moving. As we caught up with that ball and tried to make plans for that, it would shift again. And then ultimately it's leadership. Leadership lacks at DPH. They're in a silo, I think. They don't grasp what Chief Grenell spoke of, you know, in a concerted effort where we work together with Mass Emergency Management. You know, we've had calls with them and saying, what's going on? How come you guys aren't involved in this? And it almost seems like they've been shut out. And ultimately that resides with the governor. And whether or not he recognizes our plight, we've certainly been vocal enough about it. I think at the end of the day, you know, we have to stay positive and just keep these plans kind of in abeyance until we get some vaccine and we can start to deliver it. I don't know. Jeff?
I agree. I've been saying it locally that I believe the DPH is operating in a silo. So, you know, Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency exists to oversee, to help manage large-scale incidents statewide, large-scale emergency incidents. And you know, we recognize this is the biggest large-scale emergency, you know, since probably World War II, right? Where the United States felt that it was vulnerable and it prepared its entire nation on how to, you know, be resilient. And basically we shifted from wartime through Cold War to now trying to be more prepared for storms and not having to deal with a Hurricane Katrina and have it go south like it did, you know, during that incident. So we've got a system in place where, you know, DPH could have the leading seat within MEMA because it's their thing. It's a public health emergency, but they operate within that framework, which we've all trained under and been prepared to work under, where we all communicate and everyone knows what's going on and everyone knows what their role is. You know, we're talking about vaccine. It's a scarce commodity that needs to be distributed precisely to make sure that it works. And MEMA has the capability to do that. Whether that scarce quantity is drinking water or shelter or whatever it is, there's a mechanism in place to get that delivered. And I had anticipated as this pandemic wore on that we would utilize them to help communicate with the towns and make sure that it was done appropriately and efficiently. And at some point, the communication from MEMA ceased as far as what was going on with this pandemic. And they did a great job and still do a great job of providing us with PPE. If we run short of a certain size of glove or a mask or whatever, I could place a phone call and pick that up probably within a couple hours. And they have a warehouse that's available for any community to go to and get those supplies if they run short on them to make sure that we're okay.
And what do they say?
I don't see why we didn't rely on them to help with this rollout.
And what do they say, Jeff? That history repeats itself, right? History repeats itself. Right. And look at our PPE issues 14 months ago, 13 months ago. Everybody was up against it. When several months later, when they finally let MEMA take over the disbursement of the PPE, the floodgates were open.
Right.
You know, one of the things, Kevin, is DPH, you know, is really an administrative regulatory entity. It was never set up or geared, in my eyes, to be an emergency response service. They write the regulations on what we're to abide by. And unfortunately, they were given the main role in this whole pandemic, as probably the law, allows. So maybe we need to take a look at that. Someone's going to write a heck of a white paper if this is all said and done. But, when things happen, we all know to how to shift gears and how to reach out to that person that's a subject matter expert and to be able to solve any of the problems. And that's what we do very well. And we do it gracefully, I think. And we've been talking a lot about MEMA whether it's a hurricane coming and we're going to have, potential for water rescues. And, we're sitting in the same room with every agency and everybody chimes in. And that's what's missing in this whole concept as far as I'm concerned.
And if I could just interrupt for half a second, we actually have another fire chief who is joining the conversation. If you are just tuning in, we have Whitman Fire Chief Tim Greno, Duxbury Fire Chief Kevin Nord, Hanover Fire Chief Jeff Blanchard, and joining the conversation now is Abington Fire Chief John Nuttall. Chief, welcome to the conversation, and thank you very, very much for joining us.
Hi, good morning, Kevin. Sorry I'm late. I was just leaving another Zoom meeting with my town officials on a different matter. Thank you.
Yeah, so right now what we're doing is we're kind of commiserating over how we got to this particular point. I think the last question I asked was, to be a paraphrase, what the hell happened and why are we here? And as your fellow fire chiefs have been kind of, they're going back to the PPP situation earlier last year when you're trying to get enough materials to be able to take care of it. And it's like history is repeating itself. We've kind of did a little bit of a how did we get here as far as the planning, doing the particular shots. I had asked Chief Blanchard about, the distribution. How did your clinics go? And I can jump right in with you, Chief Nuttall. And as I know your community was doing the clinics. Where did you leave off? Because I would think that you were phase one, you're doing first responders, you're moving to the next group, going to the seniors and helping them. I would think that you weren't able to give a second shot to most of those people who were in a particular phase. Am I wrong?
Correct. We had just completed the phase one secondary shots for first responders. Yep. We had begun several of the phase two clinics where they get the first inoculations. It was going very well. And we were gearing up to really start doing about 1,000 a day, whether it be 1,000 a week or 1,000 a day, not quite sure how many times a week. That was dependent upon how many vaccines we got from the state. But we created the machinery to be able to administer this. The machinery was working perfectly. Now we just needed to open it up more and really kind of throttle that up. And that's when we ran out of gas because the state decided they're just not going to give us any vaccines at that point. We're scrambling now to work with Brockton Hospital and some of the area consortiums to make sure that we have at least enough vaccines on hand for the second dose of those initial phase two people that got it. We think we're going to be okay with that, but we're still extremely cautiously optimistic with that. That being said, to begin any more phase clinics, regardless of the phase, like everybody else, Abington's dead in the water because of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts decision to divert all of the vaccines away from the local communities and instead only go to either the Mass sites or the corporate drug stores and there's some other private entities that appear to also have been approved to administer vaccines, but the communities are not.
Very interesting. And do you want to say something, Chief Brenner, real quick?
Yeah, Kevin, I think that a good point to bring back up again is what Chief Nord said about we're ready. At the end of the day, kick us while we're down, do whatever you want. But at the end of the day, our residents and our taxpayers need to understand the fact that if I get a shipment of 1,000 vaccines like tomorrow morning, we're ready and we're going to vaccinate 1,000 residents. And for us at this point, like Chief Blanchard, I think, said, We started off with small clinics in phase one, tweaking it, figuring it all out, getting it up and operational. We're ready to do 500-600 a day in Whitman. We just need on the vaccine. So I think it's a good point that, you know, we're ready. And the reason that we're ready is because of the years of preparation and training and the institutional knowledge and the expertise that we have in emergency management, in emergency operations, that makes us the perfect choice for vaccination clinics.
I think it's worth asking this. You know, I when I look on social media, I've been seeing the message getting out there. If you have a chance, contact your local representation, have them call the governor's office, call Secretary Sutter, see if you can persuade them to, you know, change their minds in about face and go back to the original plan. Even so much as last Thursday, I know that Chief Reno and along with Chief Nuttall and other communities actually gathered together and held a press conference asking for that, you know, delivering the message. What was that message, Chief Reno?
The message that we tried to put out was that your public safety officials, your local Board of Health, we're here. We're trained. We're able to inoculate or vaccinate my communities. The Commonwealth has shut us off from vaccinations and left us dead in the water. And we want you to know that, you know, although mass clinics are their preferred option, it's not the best option for the 75 and plus. And we want to get our message out to the Commonwealth that, you know, we need vaccines and we need to be able to take care of our local residents, because locals, taking care of locals is your best option, especially with that age bracket.
Kevin, if I could just add to what Chief Greno said, I think the big message I took away from the press conference that Chief Greno put together was, you know, we hear you to the public. I can't tell you how many calls we're fielding, not only at the fire station, but the local council on aging, but the Board of Health, with people have reached their limits as far as the frustration with this goes. And we've followed our channels. We've managed it up through our chiefs associations and they're writing letters. We've managed it up through our state reps and our senators and they're writing letters. So hopefully that, you know, that posture will glean something good from it. And we'll hear that perhaps they'll loosen the strings on the vaccine. Now, I think we all understand too, you know, the weather impacts the delivery of the vaccine. Yep. We get that. We understand, you know, you can't move mountains when you have, you know, bad weather extremes. And if there is a less of amount of a vaccine available, you have to diligently, you know, prioritize who gets it next. We understand all that, but that's where that lack of communication comes in. It's not being reported down to emergency management, fire service, and then even in some cases, boards of health.
Yeah, but if I can just say too, the more local the government, the more close impact and drastic impacts we have directly to the residents. And that goes both ways. Local government, whether the fire chiefs, the police, town administrators, board of selectmen, we deal directly with the residents and the taxpayers to either provide them service directly to their homes or to themselves in many cases, to whatever their desire is that they need, you know, as long as we can help them. And the further up the chain of government you go, the further away they are to provide any direct service. But at the same time, I think the least, you know, there's a further disconnect of what the residents actually have. So we're hearing directly from our residents what their needs are. You go up a chain of command to the representatives and the senators, the local ones, they're also hearing from them, although they may not interface as directly as we are. You go up another chain of that command to the government, the gubernatorial layer.
Executive.
They're now getting layers between the actual resident and them. And you keep going up that chain up to the president, and I think the disconnect is drastic, and we're really seeing that. We're seeing that on a day-to-day, and it's very emotional, and there's fear in there because the residents want to be told that, you know, they're being helped. I think that they understand that there's a a lack of the vaccine and availability. Although if you divert some of the vaccines, like we said before, directly to them, we can at least take care of some of our most vulnerable. We're not going to be able to take care of the whole towns. None of us can. We understand that. And there is a need for the mass sites. There is a need for, you know, the other local clinics, how they're run, because everybody has their choice. We're not trying to tell everybody, you can only go through us. We're just trying to offer that one missing piece to our residents that we see directly, that I think higher levels of government, that they're just not seeing that, or they're not understanding that.
Chief Blanchard, did you have a comment?
Yeah, to build on what Chief Nuttall just said, is our communities know what's going on in our communities and know our people. And our so every community in this state has learned how to work together. Internally, the departments are working together. In Hanover, for example, we meet every morning at 9 a.m. We have a Zoom meeting with department heads under emergency management. We just touch base. And those meetings at the beginning of the pandemic were long. Now sometimes they're only 5-10 minutes long because we've kind of got everything kind of under control. That's how well things are going. So when we started transitioning from how to get people tested so that we could help them manage getting back to work if they were quarantined, we kind of had that under control. We started shifting to what's going to happen when the vaccine rolls out. And our school superintendent said, whatever I have to do, if I have to go help deliver the vaccine myself to help make things better and get this world back on track, he goes, I will do it. We've got to, that is the priority. We've got to do that. And in Hanover, I mean, we have a mobile integrated health program. We've been working with the school nurses, with facilities department, with our DPW, with our police department, with our community services department, with our board of health, obviously, and the fire department, everybody. And if I miss a department, I apologize, but we have all been working together to make everything happen. Whatever the problem was, we talk about it, we figure out a solution, and we do it. And we are all prepared to deliver this vaccine efficiently to our residents. We just need to be part of that plan. And we are just astounded that we're not being included in it. We're not being part of the solution. Our solution is get in your car and drive to Gillette or get into a queue on at midnight so that you might be able to go to CVS and get a shot. And your chances of getting that are as good as, you know, winning $10 on Powerball or whatever. You know,
a good example of that, is 3 months ago, it might have been six, but we all received regulatory, lifting of a guideline from DPH, which under that DPH is Office of Emergency Medical Services, which we all comply with and have it licensed to operate ambulances and paramedics. And we were all sent notice that paramedics can give vaccines. Heck, basic EMTs could give vaccines. So, I mean, there was a plan, and they communicated that, and then here we are today, and the plan shifted again. Like I said, they moved the goalposts. Like, we're not going to give you the vaccine, even though we're allowing you guys to do it through regulation. So that's frustrating. So, you know, as you look at all these dribbles of communication, and you see us going in a direction, and we're all gearing up for it. So then we send all our paramedics to special online training to give either the Pfizer or the Moderna, and we invest in those people to gear up and get ready, you know, all to find that we're not going to do it this way. We're going to do it another way.
You know, one of the things I heard from my staff, from our residents, to follow up what Chief Blanchard just said about the schools being involved, we had the same thing. We literally had the Abington school superintendent and his staff were staffing the registration portion of these clinics as the residents came in to help register them. And all hands were on deck in Abington. I think we're seeing that across the board, all of the local governments looking to do that. And like Chief Nord said, we complied with everything. We followed all the rules. This literally changed overnight. One of the things I kept hearing from my residents and from our staff that were doing it is for the first time in a year, we felt like we were able to go and be offensive on this pandemic. We're actually kicking back for a bit, punching back, I should say. And the enthusiasm was great. And the optimism was building, the enthusiasm was building. Literally overnight, this changed. And in fact, I was at one of my clinics when my health official received the email that his request for, we thought we're going to be doing 1,000 beginning of the next week, went down to zero. Everything, it literally stopped and it's dead in its tracks. You know, I haven't seen our residents get this optimistic and enthusiastic, and then suddenly just the rug was pulled out from under them and then turning into anger since the 1986 World Series with Bill Buckner. We have screwed this up. Well, they have screwed this up so bad that we have in New England, we know what that means. In Massachusetts, we know what that means. I'm starting to date myself, but anybody that was around at that time, what an awful comparison to have this administration be compared to Bill Buckner losing the 1986 World Series when it literally just went right past him.
And
that's exactly where we're at with this.
You know, John, you're talking about the 1986 World Series, which most of us remember. Jeff was talking about World War II earlier, which I think only Andy Radin would probably like to remember.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with local fire chiefs in regards to trying to get back to the efforts of localizing the distribution of COVID vaccines as it has been reversed, and the state is trying to push residents to go to these mass sites to get inoculated. We are joined by Abington Fire Chief John Nuttall, Duxbury Fire Chief Kevin Nord, Hanover Fire Chief Jeff Blanchard, and Whitman Fire Chief Tim Greno. I have to ask you, we're sitting here now in retrospect, could what's taking place now things could change in the next couple of weeks. We don't know. Could this have a long-term effect on your departments and your relationships with the state, not just your departments, but your communities and their relationship with the state and the trust factor? Jeff?
Absolutely. I think it's, you know, we advertised and held training sessions for certain members to make our town more resilient, because we knew the people would have to rely on themselves in a large scale emergency, maybe for hours or even days before more help could arrive. And we tell them, you know, that this, you know, when something like this happens, we're gonna use you. Come attend this training, because we're gonna put you to use. And you know, we have people that are really good at setting up shelters, and we train with them and we prepare with them. And when we have a long-term power outage, or there's a large storm and people need to use that shelter, we open it up and they get to use it. So it's going to be very difficult, I think, to encourage people to come prepare and train with us to do these an emergency dispensing site in case we ever have to inoculate people against a bad disease. And they're just going to say, yeah, like, what's worse than COVID-19? And if you're not going to use us for that, when would you ever use us? So I think the answer to that is yes.
No, to echo what Jeff said, Kevin, you know, I would just take it a step further and again go back and reflect on what I mentioned earlier in this interview, if you will, meeting, is the volunteers. There's so many volunteers that make up the Medical Reserve Corps. And again, in order to keep someone, you know, gamefully, you know, within the system and want to come in on his own dime and train up is the hope to be utilized to give back to the community. And when that's not done, the ramification of that is probably less volunteerism, and that'll affect us, because this is not going to be the last pandemic. This will be a new thing that'll probably roll out over the next 10 or 15 years, and we'll always be dealing with something, another, you know, tool in the toolbox on how we handle it, obviously. But yeah, the volunteers, I you know, I feel for them and appreciate all that they've done. And we've got some really great volunteers, spent countless hours of their own time. You know, what has to happen, just so the public's aware, you know, you can volunteer for an MRC and you go to the federal website. Well, someone locally has to take your name and then query and sorry you, and then spin you up with some initial training on how a vaccine clinic works or how a shelter plan works. So there's a lot of energy, a lot of time, effort spent The two gals that are doing it right now are answering almost 90 emails a day, uncompensated. And they're putting their name to that, you know, authorizing someone to go into a clinic to vaccinate. And, you know, we're scurrying around trying to figure out a way to pay them moving forward, because they should be compensated for all that time and energy, especially at that bulk of what they're doing. So the volunteers, I think we might see less volunteerism in the future.
Kevin, I think your question, and I'm going to really try to stay on point on this, but you've opened the door that this really could go anywhere with that question, is do we trust the partnership with government? And agreeing with Chief Blanchard from Hanover, yeah, I think there's damage that has been done that really does need to begin to somehow be healed on that. And the damage, really, it's the disconnect. And as I said before, it starts at the local level, and the further you move up, I think there's just a general distrust in lack of confidence in government from most people, regardless of the political party. I'm not getting into politics on this because I think both sides are guilty on this. You know, we're trying to keep it at the local level, but we can't do what we're able to because of a decision that's made at a state level. And as I said yesterday, I think it's time to start asking questions. Well, why were those decisions made? I'm not going to get into that now, but I think that opens the door to it. That further opens the door to, when you move up the chain of command, to some of the national decisions being made, and we just passed, or we saw passed, $1.9 or whatever the figure, $1 trillion coronavirus act package, whatever they named it. And when you start looking at what else was hidden in that, and billions of dollars going to other nations for God knows what, there's a disconnect. And I am going to bring this back to the local level, but it's a general disconnect and distrust of government, all under the umbrella of COVID and CARES Act and the coronavirus. And there's massive decisions being made. There's massive money being transferred from what, you know, I'm not going to get into where some of the money went in other countries. I have no idea how that's tied to COVID, but it was under the umbrella of that. When you bring that back down to the local level and the people that we see, the average American, whether they live in Abington or Duxbury or Brockton or Cohasset or California, people are seeing this, and they're really starting to question what the hell is going on. Who do we trust? And we, as local officials that are trying to just provide emergency service and care, we're kind of under the shadow of that. And people start questioning, you know, what's going on. And I think the more local you get, the more transparent you are, because you have to. We're responsible to our very own neighbors, yep, literally, who we're providing service for, and they're paying for that. That disconnect has got to end, and we really need to start somehow bringing things back to reality from the top all the way down. We're seeing an impact with that.
And Kevin, on that topic, I don't want to say benefit, but I think where we have our arms around the trust issue is you go back to that collaboration at the local level. You've got Abington and Whitman and Hanover and Duxbury and East Bridgewater. All of our Plymouth County towns are working hand in hand at emergency services level. And when I get bad news, like from the Commonwealth, I'm advertising what the Commonwealth is doing, as is Abington, as is Hanover, as is Duxbury. So our residents know that we're being as transparent as possible. And as we're talking, I'm scrolling through a bunch of emails that came in on this morning. I've got 7 or 8 emails just from yesterday's press conference alone from residents thanking us for standing up for that local resident, because they trust the fire service. They trust us. They don't trust bigger government.
It's funny you say that, because the one thing that I've learned from my years in media is when it comes to the fire service, when it comes to your manpower, if somebody is lonely, they'll call the fire department, you know, for a well-being check. They count on the fire department for so many different things. And not to diminish any other department, but I identify and know from things that I've covered over the years. So it's interesting that you share that tidbit. And when we talk about trust, the one thing I would ask you, we're hearing the reports that there's still ongoing issues with the website to be able to sign up, to be able to get a shot. The governor recently made a comment that he's pissed and, you know, he's going to fix this.
Can you say that in TV?
Yeah, you can, yeah. What's interesting is has it gone to a point where the state has realized that maybe they shouldn't have done this, but they don't know how to reverse the, you know, reverse and go back to what it was, because it would, it could be a source of embarrassment for the state? Is that possible?
I think this goes back to, we need a dialogue, not a monologue from the top down. We need a dialogue to go in both directions, and neither side may like to, may not want to hear what the other side says, but that's how we solve problems in this country. Mm. But we used to. We need that dialogue back and forth so that they're hearing from us, we're hearing from them, and not just a monologue coming from the top down saying, thou shalt, without any explanation, because maybe, you know, sometimes we have different ideas than they have, and they just don't know that. You know, obviously they're going to know things that we don't know. We understand that. We need a dialogue to discuss these, to correct them.
And that dialogue will help us provide answers. You know, we're all accountable to somebody. And we've been directly accountable to the residents and understand their needs and know what they are. And it's easier for us to explain to them what's going on in a more global level. If we have that give and take, like Chief Nuttall just mentioned, but we haven't been getting that, and that's been part of the frustration. And I think, you know, just to close out, I think all of us as chiefs with this vaccine, we really wanted to get it to our you know, the phase two A and B group, the 75 plus, the 65 plus, the infirmed, the homebound, potentially, you know, the low income. And service them, because they can't travel in this type of weather. They have obvious health issues, and you know, I think there's a physical inability to do that, and I've said that the very well could be a psychological inability to do that. They just don't want to venture out that far. So, you know, the phase three, the general population, the healthy population, I think can go through those mass sites, but I think locally we need to get that vaccine for that first part of phase two.
Chief Blanchard, did you want to chime in?
I think he's muted.
Chief, I think you're muted, sir.
I had some background noise a minute ago. Sorry. I think the word dialogue is very important here. Yes. As it stands right now, if you're not able to catch the governor's like news conference, you're not up to speed with like what's going on, right? And that's great. And I think that's, you know, when we talk about the word transparency as a buzzword we all want to use out there, it makes government transparent, right? But those that have to react and be able to work with their communities and help put these things together where the rubber meets the road, it's very difficult, I think, for us to work that way as those that are leaders within the community that are responsible for delivering the service. To have to react to a 12 o'clock press conference and make decisions on the fly is very difficult. And I think it would be helpful if a clearer picture was being painted from the top on down as to what we could expect. And you know, maybe there is a plan to ultimately put vaccine in the local town's hands. But if there is a clear plan to do that, it hasn't been articulated to us yet. And, you know, I think that's important. I think it's this lack of communication that's the overarching theme here that needs to be addressed.
We get about 7 or 8 minutes left in our conversation here. And I usually try to reserve that at the end of a conversation for anything we haven't had a chance to discuss, maybe a pertinent point to be able to kind of wrap it up and maybe put a positive spin on it. I know it's kind of tough to do. Is there anything that we haven't touched upon during our conversation that one of you gentlemen wants to, or all of you want to take a chance at talking about?
And I think our residents, and I think your listening group just needs to know that, you know, we're here and we're ready. And, you know, my glass is half full, and I have to think, you know, I know that the governor is a smart man, and you know, there's time to make some mid-operation like operational change here in our residents. You know, just need to know that we're here for them and we're ready. And once we get the green light, we'll be vaccinating again. And if there's anything that we can do for them in the meantime, you know, as they've always done in the past, all they need to do is reach out to us.
Keep going.
Yeah, I just, you know, echo that as well. And I know the sun's going to come out today sometime. We're ready and we're going to stay on this and continue pushing back on, you know, our state reps and try to focus some conversations with DPH and the governor's office and just continue to work this problem, you know.
You got up.
I think over the last year, all of us were really beginning now to feel the effects of the COVID, just the fatigue, dealing with all the daily things all of us have been dealing with. And when each time there's been a milestone, if we can just make it till this point, it started out, we're going to make it 2 weeks, and then it's going to go to this. And then if we can get to this point, and then if we can just start wearing the mask, we're going to shut down this holiday. And we keep going to point A to point B to point B to keep going. We're breaking it up into small segments, ultimately to get the vaccine, which hopefully could end this. And that's what's happening now. We're at the point where the vaccine is here. It's not in abundant supply, and everybody really wants it to be, all of us included, so that we can hopefully get to the next step to maybe begin ending this and getting back to reality. And I think that's why we're at that nexus right now, that everybody's at the point we've all been told we've been waiting for, and there is zero patience from people to see anything go wrong with that because they want to move forward with their lives. We understand that. It is going to get fixed. Ultimately, you know, it's not as going as fast as any of us want it to be, but that's a reality. Like Chief Nord said, the sun is going to come out. We're strong Americans. We're going to get past this. And I think right now, it's the month of February is always the worst month for everybody in New England anyway. Thank God it's the shortest month because it's the worst month weather-wise. And I think just everybody wants to get moving on this. We're all getting somewhat impatient, and we really don't want to see anything slow this down further than we've already been slowed down for the last year. So we will get past it. We're going to somehow make sure everybody that wants the vaccine will get it. It's not coming as fast as we'd like, but we are trying. We'll get through it.
Chief Blanchard?
I think Chief Nuttall did a nice job of kind of wrapping that up. I'd like to just maybe add a thank you to all of the residents of our communities and you know, of every community, basically, who have been so patient and done their part, and particularly to recognize the volunteers who, you know, signed up with their local communities. Hanover had over 200 volunteers that offered their areas of expertise in every way, shape, or form, you know, during this pandemic. And right now we've got a list of 85, just looking at it, counting it, like 85 residents with medical training that are willing to come and help out at a vaccination site, you know, once we're ready to stand it up. And that's just, you know, Hanover's a community with 15,000 people. So to have 85, you know, residents with medical expertise put themselves out there to help us is just, you know, a snapshot of what's going on in every community. So I really want to thank everyone out there that's reached out to their communities and tried to be a helpful part of the solution in the response, and for everyone that's done their part in helping stop the spread. And like Chief Nuttall said, we'll get through this.
Yeah, I think the important part, I think you've all said it in one way or another, is you know, it's going to take time to gain herd immunity and for us to get the shots up. It's being patient. Chief Brennan, I want to thank you for being the conduit, being able to connect.
Or the conduit.
Being the guy who connected us with all these other chiefs, as you always do. See, Chief Nuttall is laughing. Do you want to say anything?
I've heard Chief Brennan.
I've been called a lot of things, Jeffrey, but not conduit.
I was just going to say, that's probably one of the most kinder things I've heard.
We'll call him the condor.
He swoops in. But I want to thank you all for taking time out of your busy schedules to discuss this important topic, this issue, because it is very important. And if we can use any form of medium or media to be able to get the word out, it's appreciative that you're able to channel it through myself and the multiple sources that I'm able to get the word out through. So I definitely thank you all.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Thank you for doing this, because you have been very kind to us in the past about coming on your show, and I think it's important, so thank you.
The only thing is that usually when we have you on, we get a chance to really drill down into what the fire service offers and what you guys do and the brotherhood, the sisterhood, and what you're able to provide, and even the tough times. I mean, again, when you're trying to put your budgets together and trying to tell people, hey, there's a reason why we're trying to upgrade our equipment and we're trying to build a new fire station, or we're looking to add to our membership when it comes to certain volunteers. You know, I enjoy those conversations more. This conversation we had to have today was it was a little bit more tougher because, you know, you really don't want to put anybody on the hot seat. But I think people need to know that you know, that the communities have been doing their jobs, whether it's the fire department, the health department, the public schools, whoever has been helping to kind of lead the charge to be able to inoculate our citizens. You know, again, I think it's important that we're able to at least shed light on that. So again, I thank you for your time. Good call. All right. And again, thank you very much for tuning into this conversation we had with South Shore Fire Chiefs in regards to localizing the distribution of COVID vaccines.